Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome, and a very, very happy new year to you. May 2015 be your best year ever. Wouldn't that be great? Well, we're going to kick off the show today with a little vicarious adventure with a man who had a big dream. Alan Carr begins his book with one of my favorite Irish proverbs: "There are no strangers, only friends you haven't met." And he found himself in a situation where, you know, things were ticking along quite nicely, and then he's started having marriage issues. He started having work issues. He decided the fork in the road was pointing to that big dream of his. And he sold almost everything he owned and set off on a 3-year journey across 5 continents alone on his motorcycle. And his book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine and Connection. And this is a beautiful book. It's full of pictures, full of story, full of interesting facts about the countries he visited. And so we're going to bring him on in 5 minutes. But I wanted to just welcome Eric Ryder into the new year, too, since he's by my side the whole time.
Hey, good afternoon and happy new year
and
to you, Vicki.
Happy new year
to all
you.
Our listeners.
Yes, yes. And so you had a great time over the holidays?
I did, yeah. It was very relaxed, but got to go down to California and see the family down there, so that was very nice, and got to hang out here as well. So I had like 3 Christmas dinners in a row. It was, so now I'm trying to take off those pounds here in the new year.
Okay, well, that's a good.
Enjoyed myself.
You need to tune in next week, Eric.
Absolutely,
because we're going to talk about one of the most successful diets for the last 4 years in a row. It's been voted one of the most successful diets.
I'll be taking notes.
Yeah, me too. And so this is our first day back in the studio today. It's yours too, right?
Yeah. Actually, I was back in for a couple days here last week.
So. Okay. Well, it's good to be back in the studio. And I'm going to ask you very quickly, have you set any New Year's goals?
Well, we talked about one already, which was losing some weight. Yeah, because I had 2014, so much good food in 2014. So 2015, I'm going to try and taper that down. Now, I don't feel like I'm, you know, obese or anything like that, but you know, I could probably stand to drop about 10 pounds and I'd feel a little bit better about myself. So that's the goal.
You hit the nail on the head. It's how you feel about yourself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to petition next year that Starbucks cranberry bliss bars are banned because those things, I cannot leave them alone. And to my horror, when I was down in Portland, I happened to be hanging around at the Starbucks and I looked up and I was like, you are kidding me. There's 345 calories in one of those little triangles.
Wow.
And I've been eating them by the box full.
It sounds so healthy, though. Cranberry, bliss.
Well, they're bliss while you're eating and then, right. Then you're stuck with the bar on your butt, you know? So anyway. So, well, what else? Do you have any other?
Well, I'm hoping to really take the band up just a little bit more. I mean, we had a pretty good 2014, so hoping to make 2015 even better for us. It's getting tougher because we're all getting older, so that the drive of youth is not quite there, but at the same time, we're a better band than ever. We've got a record out now, and we're hoping to just really kind of take it up a notch.
So okay, and we'll it's Battersea.
Battersea is the band, yes.
Battersea is Eric's band. Check him out if you have not heard him. Well, before we bring on my guest for today, I also want to introduce somebody else very quickly, and that is my brother. He's joining us today from England. Hey, Colin.
Hi, how you doing?
I am doing well. And Colin Barnett is my brother. Some of you may have heard him before when he was over here in America traveling, not last year, but the year before. And but he's going to join us today specifically because my guest went around the world on a motorcycle. And I know this is one of my brother's ambitions. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to have him with us. He definitely will have some questions. So he'll be joining us throughout the hour today. All right. We are going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we will have my guest on the phone, Alan Carl. Looking forward to talking with him. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Have some Christmas pounds to lose? The DASH diet has been chosen as the number one best diet overall by U.S. News and World Report for 4 years in a row. Author and registered dietitian Marla Heller joins Vicky St. Clair next Monday to tell you how to fire big food and big pharma. Catch Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Alternative Talk 1150. Or listen to the podcast at conversationslive.net.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And as I said at the top of the hour, we're going to kick off this year with a little vicarious adventure through my guest, Alan Carl. So why would someone sell nearly everything he owns, then pack up and travel for 3 years alone and on a motorcycle? That's what we're going to find out. His new book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine and Connection. And as I said, this is a beautiful book, beautiful coffee table book, just full of great information, great story and great pictures. Let me tell you a little bit about Alan Carl. He apparently, according to his biography, has never been able to sit still. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised that he went around the world like this. He's an author, photographer, entrepreneur, professional keynote speaker, and a committed adventurer. He's the principal of World Rider Productions, where he focuses on speaking, publishing, coaching, and creating content that brings to life his stories and experiences around the world. He also founded a top 50 digital agency and currently works as a digital branding consultant for Clear Cloud Digital. That was a tongue twister there. Alan Carl, welcome.
Hi, Vicky. Great to be here.
And you know, and as our listeners know, my brother Colin is joining us from England too. He's on the line and may jump out here with some questions as we go through the next hour here. So I want to begin a little with how this came about for you, because you were in a situation where you found yourself at a fork in the road. You weren't happy with what was happening with work. You were having marriage issues, even though you still loved one another and were still friends. You both agreed you'd be better off leading separate lives. So what point did this dream that you'd had come to fruition for you?
Well, I think when these forks, as you said, you know, certainly unfulfilled at my job and the marriage kind of falling apart, my reaction initially was to just go get another job, start another company, and see where another relationship might fall into play there. But I realized that, you know, as we move down this journey of life, that often we put our dreams and our passions in the back seat. And I know I had. I always loved to travel. It's always been part of my DNA, and my passions have always been writing and photography and certainly riding motorcycles. So I just, you know, it was kind of a wake-up call, and I said, you know, why fall back into that same trap? Why not really do what I've always wanted to do, and that is travel the world and then document it through photos, stories, and see it through the seat of a motorcycle.
Right. And so it sounds simple. You have this great idea, but I know a lot of work went into this before you set off. So let's look at what went into it. How long did it take you to put this together?
I planned for about 2 years researching through, you know, obviously using the internet, but through books and buying tons of maps. Most of the world at this point had largely not been documented by what is so common now in Google Maps and other map services on the internet. And also it's the logistics that you've got to think about, crossing so many borders. Through my trip, I crossed something like 60 borders, sometimes back and forth through the 35 countries I visited. So, you know, there's issues with visas. And then you've got all the immunization. You know, we want to make sure we're healthy on the road and to make sure that I am protected in that sense. And then, of course, just I think a lot of us, you know, we spend a lot of time working out, going to the gym, getting our bodies in shape. But what do we do to get our mind in shape? How does your mindset, how do you get your worldview, you know, widening and expanding that? So as I read before I embarked on this journey, much about the different countries, the cultures. And one of the things I really wanted to do, and it was a goal of mine, was to you know, not only see the world, the culture, and the places, but to learn about the history and about the people. So I tried to visit as many UNESCO World Heritage sites as I could. These are sites that have been recognized by the United Nations World Heritage Foundation as having significant importance in terms of either history or cultural or even environmental, biological. Beautiful places like, you know, here in the United States, the Grand Canyon would be an example of a UNESCO site. But in, say, the middle of Bolivia, the whole city center of Sucre, which is the capital of Bolivia, is designated a World Heritage Site. So that's the kind of research I put into this.
Right. And your friends, you said, all thought you were crazy. Thought you were going through some midlife crisis.
Yeah, it was one friend says, you're going through an extreme route of a midlife crisis. Can't you just buy the Porsche convertible and, you know, and date a 20-year-old? I mean, come on, Alan.
So tell our listeners where you started off this journey, how this journey began for you.
So I lived in Southern California. I started in Newport Beach, where I'd spent the last 20 years or so working, building the company I'd started, and then headed north to Alaska all the way. I wanted to go to the Arctic Circle, all the way to the Arctic Ocean, as far north as the road could go. This also gave me a chance. I then up in Alaska, so to speak, make a U-turn and head south towards the western states and then into Mexico. But this gave me a chance to really test my motorcycle, make sure everything was packed right. I was carrying a lot of stuff, and initially, as I learned, too much stuff. I think any of us who travel can attest to knowing that. And that's where I started.
And so when you I know you wanted to go on a motorcycle, but you had to make some serious adjustments. You had to get a new motorcycle for one thing. You had to check out the specs. You wrote in the book about how 2 inches of a tire makes a huge difference. So talk to us a little bit about that. Colin, you can jump in here because I know nothing about motorcycles other than how to sit on the back there.
I was actually interested in his food angle because one of the impressions I get from reading a lot of the adventure riders that do travel around the world is the connections they make with people is really surprising to them and one of the most rewarding aspects of traveling. But you've linked that to food in your book, Alan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, where do we all, I mean, just within our own families and our own friends, if we have a party at somebody's house, where do we always end up? It seems we're either in the kitchen while people are preparing food, or we're sitting around a table sharing food. And one of the things that I learned early on in my journey is that how we make connections with people over good food or drink. And that, to me, was so much important part of the journey. So as I started to write this book, Colin, I originally thought it was going to be a typical travel log. And then I realized, well, this story is not really about me and my adventure. Certainly, there's as we've talked this morning here, about that. But really, it's about the people I met and the immersion I had with the different cultures and countries. And I thought, wow, I've got to include the photographs of these people, and I've got to include recipes from each of those countries I visited, so that anybody buying this book can kind of travel vicariously and see the world through the photos, feel it through the stories of culture and connection, and certainly taste it through the flavors of that food.
I've had a look at your book, Alan, briefly, and I've seen some of the food photos. I've done some traveling on my own across Europe, but one of the things I did find difficult, really, was actually stopping and finding good places to eat nutritionally, because when you're on your road, you tend to kind of eat quick and carry on, if you know what I mean. So if there's a McDonald's, I'd drop in there. But you seem to have explored the culture in quite a lot of detail through the food.
Yeah, absolutely. I made it a point not to fall into that trap of going into my comfort zone when it comes to eating. You know, one of the things I speak about a lot is the importance of being open, and that's open to new experiences, new cultures, and new ideas and things like that, and also new food. And, you know, a lot of times our taste buds, I think, are set as we're younger, and it takes some kind of nudging to try something that maybe when you were a kid you didn't like, but all of a sudden, you know, as an adult, your taste, your flavors do change. And that was very important. Nutritionally, you know, some places, that's going to be very difficult. I mean, Mexico, for example, has got great food, and yet their food is very, very high in fat and carbohydrates. So, you know, you need to be prudent with your diet, but at the same time, you want to taste the unique food, for sure.
Well, we'll talk for sure about food when we come back. We do need to take a quick break here, and I want to get into a couple of your favorite recipes and some of your favorite experiences along the journey here. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Alan Call, and his book is called Forks, Culture, Cuisine, Connection, A Quest For. Thank you. Stay tuned.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Do you have a loved one who's exceptional in the kitchen or who simply loves to cook? This holiday, buy them a beautiful one-of-a-kind market bag or designer apron from Shantou's Designs. Seattle designer Kathleen Callan's unique designs are handmade in America, using the finest high-quality fabrics whimsical, elegant, happy, and yummy designs that make heartfelt gifts for years to come. Find Chantus Designs exclusively at Pike Place Market. Check Kathleen's Pike Place dates and times at chantusdesigns.com.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We're talking with Alan Carl. He is a photographer and author, a keynote speaker, and world traveler. His new book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine, and Connection. And it's true to say, Alan, that, I mean, you did not rush around the world here. You put 2 years into the planning, as you said, and you took your time going places. You took time to stop and connect and you know, eat the local food, meet the local people. And I was just saying during the break how beautiful the pictures that really resonate with me are the people pictures. And just looking at some of the faces there, how they seem to tell a story, even, you know, it may not be totally true. I may be thinking one thing when I was, you know, the person is actually all about something else. But they really do tell a story.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, and if they strike an imagination and a thought, especially a faraway place, some of those unique faces, you know, they're all stories. What I love about them is getting the people to smile, and you can see really kind of truth in their eyes.
Mm-hmm. And so let's go back to the bike question that I asked. It's because this is part of the journey. You know, when you travel, you've got to determine how you go, whether it's on foot, by bike, by motorcycle, and you chose to go by motorcycle. What kind of things went into picking the right bike? Because you're traveling a hell of a long way there.
The first thing that's so important about choosing a motorcycle for a round-the-world journey is durability and endurance. And then the second thing would be fuel, gas mileage. You know, quality of fuel and availability of fuel when you get into some of the road parts are a concern. I chose a BMW F650 GS. It's a single cylinder. It's like a big dirt bike, kind of like an enduro or we call them dual sport motorcycles. And you'd asked about the BMW makes several models, but I did have a prior model of this same motorcycle, but I decided to buy the more durable bike called the Dakar, and it did have a larger front wheel and a bigger suspension, beefier suspension. And the reason that you want the front wheel larger is you go over a pothole, it's amazing. If you look at the diameter of a wheel, 19 inches to 21 inches sounds like only 2 inches, but it can make a thud into a pothole more smooth when you go into a
right.
bottle or just on a dirt road, and
right.
then the suspension for the same reason.
The difference between staying on the bike and coming off the bike in many cases,
exactly.
I would think. So let's, I know you said it's impossible for you to choose a favorite country, but let's say in Central America, did you have a favorite country in Central America?
Yeah, I really loved Guatemala in Central America because out of all the countries there, the Mayan culture really is vibrant. You see it along the lakes of the northern part of the country, all the way through, you know, the eastern part of the country where some of the great ruins of the Mayans, the Tikal, for example. I loved Guatemala, and the food was great.
And did you have a favorite food from there?
You know, the recipe I chose for Guatemala is called jocon, and it is a traditional Mayan recipe. It's a it's chicken. You can actually use the sauce is what makes it. And it's with it's tomatillos, which was largely used in Latin food, but it's mixed with pumpkin seeds and sesame seeds, and it's just really flavorful. When you look at it for a quick second, it looks kind of like guacamole. It's got that because of the tomatillo.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
Can I go back on the
Go ahead.
Go back. go back to the bike a bit, Alan. Looking at your pictures, you've got quite a bit of kit on the back of that bike. Weight's often a factor, isn't it, when you're travelling long distances, in case you drop it or any other issues happen. How did you cope with that?
Yeah, it was a heavy load, and traveling on some of the bad roads made it particularly challenging. You know, I had about 180 pounds, almost 200 pounds of stuff, because I'm carrying a computer, a couple cameras, these kinds of things. So the suspension, you know, I beefed up even more the rear suspension to make sure that the height of the bike and the rear would be heavier, higher, and then that so that when I put the gear on, you know, you had that play, so you wouldn't you know, the bottom out, so to speak. And then just, you know, your riding skills improve as you travel with that weight.
I was just going to ask, actually, if you'd had any prior off-road riding experience at all, because you haven't got tarmac on so many of these routes, have you?
Yeah, not a lot of tarmac. Definitely I had a little bit of off-road, but I was by no means a very experienced off-road rider. Part of that 2 years, I did take a off-riding course with a gentleman named Jimmy Lewis. He's a very well-known dirt rider. He's raced in the Dakar and many of these very high-profile off-road races. And that was some of the prep that I did for the ride.
Mm. I'd be kind of interested as well, Alan, in knowing what was the most useless thing you were carrying in all of that luggage.
That, you know, that's really, you know, I carried so many things. I carried a huge video camera. I say huge in this day and age. Now our iPhones are as good. And I got to the border of Mexico, and I realized for as little time as I was shooting video with that, I also had a little camera that was capable of video, of course, and that was crazy. And then, you know, I did carry a stove, like a mess kit, as we would call it, scouting. You know, basically I could cook food out in the outback. But I realized that even though if I was on this journey alone, that if I ever really was hungry, I'd just turn around and there was someone there. There was always food. So I think that, but I carried it all around the world, you know, one of those little camping stoves, and maybe used it a total of 5 times after 3 years.
Wow.
So I think that was, yeah.
Wow. So it is one of those things you think you've got to take with you just in case.
Yeah, just in case, you know, yeah. And then always. And then even I never wanted to get rid of it, you know.
Right. So yeah,
can I ask?
Go ahead.
Just about the journey itself, because I mean, you've obviously got some really key connection points that it'll stay with you for life when you meet people or some of the landscapes you went through. But there must have been some periods when you questioned what you were doing in all of that distance you traveled.
There were some frustrating times, whether it was just a really bad road and it seemed like I was never going to get anywhere. In Kenya, for example, there was another time when I was in Cairo and I was just driving in circles and circles trying to get my way in and out around that city, figuring it out. And I was like, what the heck am I doing? And they, you know, those kinds of things. But usually it would be just stemming, Colin, from frustration as opposed to, you know, loneliness or fear. So once you kind of face your own frustration, realize, you know, you're letting it bother you. I think it was, you know, it took a little bit because, trust me, these places are no fun. That road in Kenya, I mean, I was literally riding and swearing at it, screaming over the top of my engine. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you about one of the most dangerous countries that you went to. I mean, you know, whether the media plays this up more than it should, but that is Colombia. You know, I think worldwide people do consider it to be one of the most dangerous countries. And yet, at the end of that chapter, you write, and you did have some scary moments in there, but at the end of that chapter, you write, though we were worlds and languages apart, we have come together like friends to experience the beauty of a waterfall and to share powerful gift of human connection. So tell us what happened there with the guns and the waterfalls and the connection.
So I'm about 4 hours from the border when I'm stopped in Colombia by 3 policemen who warn me that I'm about to ride through the most dangerous part of Colombia. They tell me not to stop. I ride for a couple hours and don't see a single car or a single person. The mountains get taller, the jungle gets thicker, and the cliffs are definitely getting steeper. And then I come around a corner and I see this beautiful waterfall, and I've got to stop and take a photograph. I'm a photographer, right?
Right.
So nobody sees me, so I stop, get off the motorcycle, Actually, before I even could get off the motorcycle, I realize I'm flanked by two guys clad in jungle fatigues holding automatic weapons. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, where the hell did these guys come from? And I explain as quickly as I can in Spanish that I'm here just to take a picture of the waterfall I'm going on. And they say, you like waterfalls, do you? Well, there's another one in the jungle. Get off your bike and follow us. And I think, okay, is that an order or an offer?
Well, you can imagine,
and,
yeah.
I'm standing on the side of the road in the most dangerous part of Colombia, and on one side of me, I have two guys with guns ordering me in the jungle, and on the other side, I've got my bike. It's my ticket to escape, but if I hop on it, are they going to shoot? And I decide to assess the situation, listen to my intuition and gut, and I look into their eyes, and I have this sense of something sounds right here. So we walk into the jungle, and I think I lift my camera at one point and take a picture of the guy marching ahead of me with his gun. He turns around and just snarls at me with these mean eyes and says, no, no, give me that camera. So I give him the camera, show him the picture, show him how to take a picture, and he puts the camera on his neck, and we keep going into the jungle. The other guy's behind me with his gun, and it seems like, you know, an hour, but it could have been 20 minutes. But
right.
We finally come to a clearing. In the middle of it is this pool of water, and above it is a waterfall and three tiers tumbling and roaring into that pool, beautiful beyond words. And then the guy with that camera, my camera, shifts his gun behind him and starts taking pictures. Taking pictures of me, taking pictures of the waterfall, the trees. And then he hands the camera to the other compadre and asks him to take a picture of the two of us. And you see this in the book. So here's this guy next to me with his gun. You know, and we're like buddies by the waterfall, and you know, and it is that message that something here you've got to, you know, obviously face your fears
right.
and confront danger, and you also have to listen to your gut, and things felt right. I still to this day don't know who those guys were, paramilitary, FARC, freelancers. I don't know, but that moment in the jungle as the birds are, you know, singing and the breeze is shuffling those jungle trees and the water's roaring into that pool, and we're laughing
yeah.
about, you know, this whole thing, and that's the gift of human connection I speak of here.
And what a great story to tell when you come home too. I want to talk about Botswana, because this really surprised me, because I don't think of donkeys when I think of Botswana. So tell us what's the donkey situation is there, and why you included that in the book.
Well, it became kind of a joke, because I could not travel 100 yards without seeing a donkey. And I, you know, even when I stopped to, they're very concerned about hoof and mouth disease with the cattle and things there. So there are checkpoints where they supposedly, you know, decontaminate you and your bike. But when I finally get to the city center of Maun, which is kind of the one of the larger cities, probably the second largest city in Botswana, and it's also the gateway to the Okavango Delta, which is a beautiful wildlife preserve, huge. And there are donkeys roaming the streets, just as if it's like normal. Like there's more donkeys than people, it seems to me. And you hear these stories talking to people how at nighttime, because there's no traffic lights, or rather street lights, and the headlights on a lot of the vehicles aren't very powerful, that people will run into these donkeys, have terrible accidents, and even get killed. And I thought, well, why doesn't the government do something about all the donkeys? So to me, it became a very funny topic of conversation as I met the locals. I would say, what are you thinking about all the donkeys? Who owns that donkey? And nobody knows who owns that donkey. And until it died,
yeah, right? And then they wanted to claim it.
Yeah, until one dies, so somebody can say, you owe me money for the donkey. All of a sudden, the owners come out of the woodwork. It's hilarious. And what I had learned in the, you know, as I traveled and always brought up this conversation, because it's very, very hilarious, is that at one point, because of disease, hitting the animals, for particularly in the farms, the bulls, the cows that would pull the plows, they had died off. I mean, what had done is the government actually had to exterminate a lot of them so it wouldn't infect others. So the government exterminates all these possibly infected bulls, cows, and then to replace those, the government gave everybody donkeys because they were more resistant to this particular strain of virus or infection. And that was 20 years ago. But now you have this, the donkeys apparently reproduce like rabbits. So now you have this amazing, like thousands and thousands of donkeys roaming the fields and the cities of Botswana, and nobody really knows what to do, but they are a little bit of a menace.
Well, like I said, I never would have put donkeys with Botswana, so that's an interesting insight there. Let's move to the Middle East and to Syria, and this is a country that's obviously been in the news a great deal lately. Many people told you you will never get into Syria, so tell us about your experience there.
Yeah, so apparently I learned as I traveled that as an American, because we have diplomatic relations with Syria, I was required, tourists are required to get a visa in your home country, which would be Washington, D.C. But I'd been traveling 2 years on the road, and I had no idea I really was going to go to Syria. And when I got to the border, sure enough, they write on a piece of paper and hand me the phone number and the website for the Syrian embassy in Washington, D.C., and say, go there. And I'm thinking, great, you know, here I am at the border of Jordan and Syria, and I don't want to turn around. And I decide that I can't accept no for an answer. I'm going to be persistent, and there's got to be a way. You know, this is a chance to experiment with a little diplomatic negotiation, I figure. So I pull out my tent and pack up, set up tent and set up camp right there at the border. And as each shift changes for the border and customs personnel, I go up again and ask, there's got to be some way. And it took about 24 hours, but I finally got them to give me a visa by faxing Damascus, the capital of the country. And they got an approval. But with all the stamps in my passport and all the customs stamps in my carnet for my motorcycle, when I got to the border guards, there's a huge iron gate. They wouldn't lift it, and they order me to the side because other cars need to pass through. And they tell me the chief inspector wants to see me. And I'm thinking, great, somebody's got in trouble because they weren't supposed to get me a visa, and I'm not going to be able to go. And then a few minutes later, this guy shows up on a carrying a tray, and on it are three cups of tea. And he says, Mr. Allen, before you go, we must share chai. This is what they call tea in the Middle East.
Right.
And he's chai, we got to have chai. And we sit down on the right there in front of the border guard and drink tea. And he asks me about my country, my travels. And then using a stick, he draws an outline in the ground in the dirt of the country of Syria and puts little dots in places. You must go here. Here is Crèche de Chevalier. Here is Aleppo. And it was just this wonderful moment that, again, my perception, my expectation was they were going to stop me again. But really, they had more curiosity about me than maybe I had about them.
Yeah, you talk through the book about all the help you got. You know, when you were lost or hungry, you turned around and someone was there to help. Do you think that, or how much of that do you think was due to your attitude and being open to experience?
I think people generally are open and curious around the world. I will say that I think that if you go into a situation, go into a country or travel with this idea that something bad's going to happen, something probably will bad happen. So I think attitude does have a huge amount of it. I was always open and curious, and I sported the weapon that I always like to say that I carried that didn't cost me anything, didn't weigh anything, and it doesn't take any training to use, and that's the weapon of a smile. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so disarming, and I believe that those experiences have a contributory effect because of the attitude. But really, yes, people are friendly and curious.
Right.
That's a kind of common feeling, I think, of a lot of world travelers. I read Ted Simon's Jupiter Travels book.
Yeah.
He traveled around the world years and years ago. But he traveled in some of the areas that were on the BBC News and our media as war-torn areas, etc. And he went through them. But they were often little micro areas in that country. And he said that you could go right the way across the country and not come across any difficulties. And people were just really, really friendly.
Yeah, that's so true.
That impression. The country war-torn, et cetera, it wasn't necessarily so. It was just small areas.
Yeah, and I came through. I was in Israel when there was problems happening in Lebanon right over the border. I came through Jordan. People had said, "Oh, you've got to be careful of these parts." But yeah, I never saw any conflict. I never was afraid. I never really felt I was in danger. I just exercised, as I said, you know, prudence and used my gut. You know, use your intuition. It's going to tell you the right thing.
And I'm not suggesting you can't get into serious trouble, as you probably experienced yourself or almost did. But I just think the propaganda of the media that we get in our lounge nowadays, it just skew things unless you become a world traveler or become a bit more broader with your travel.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, here I live 45 miles from the border of Mexico, and there's people that are around my neighborhood who are afraid. They think they're going to get beheaded if they go to Mexico. It's because that's what we see in the media. But thousands of people go into Mexico every day and come back safely. And you know, it's just in the news. You know, they say if it bleeds, it leads.
That's right.
The old adage.
That's right.
So Yeah.
Well, we used to live in San Diego, and Colin would actually go down to do his weekly grocery shopping in Mexico because he had a young family to feed. So we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You were listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Alan Carr. His new book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine and Connection. And we're also joined, of course, by my brother, Colin Barnett, over in England, another avid motorcyclist and photographer. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
They seem like such a perfect couple. There must be some other explanation.
Why doesn't she just leave?
I don't understand why she puts up with him.
It takes two to argue.
It's not my place to interfere.
If someone you know is a victim of intimate partner abuse, you can give them back their voice.
Call 1-800-799-SAFE or go to thehotline.org.
Let your voice be heard.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jude and Paul Ponton at Whispering Dragon, we cover the world of animals. This week, January 11th, it's Talk With Your Animals Sunday with gifted animal communicator and medium Darcy Pariso in the studio. We'll have open phone lines throughout the show for your calls. Darcy's great with details and can help you connect with your animal or human loved ones on this side or the other, so plan to give us a call on Martha Norwalk's Animal World Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN!
Have some Christmas pounds to lose? The DASH diet has been chosen as the number one best diet overall by U.S. News & World Report for 4 years in a row. Author and registered dietitian Marla Heller joins Vicki St. Clair next Monday to tell you how to fire big food and big pharma. Catch Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Alternative Talk 1150. Or listen to the podcast at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Ahead of the talk radio curve, naturally. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We are kicking off 2015 with Alan Carr. His book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine and Connection. And Alan is a world traveler, a biker, a photographer, an author, keynote speaker. And so I want to ask you, Alan, since we've talked about some of the countries you've been to, you went to 5 continents in 3 years on a motorcycle. What surprised you most along the way?
You know, it's one of those things that you hear about, travelers kind of hear about, but until you really feel it and see it, you get it. And that is that the people that have so little and that you encounter along the way are always the ones who are willing to give you so much, even the bed in their home.
I've heard that from so many travelers. I've heard it from so many people.
And you know, you hear it, and you say, okay, yeah, it's there, but, you know, it's like, okay, but when you're out there and you really feel that, and gifts are offered to you, it's almost like I feel guilty about taking them, but yet it's more of a negative if you refuse a gift.
Right.
So you have to be gracious in that.
Right, yeah. I've talked with many adventurers who've said the same thing. You don't want to take from these people because they have so little, but they would be offended if you did not, if it was offered.
Yeah, exactly. That I think, and also just the diversity. You know, traveling overland, and this is something, you know, a lot of times we get put into a big tube in an airplane and fly halfway across the world, you exit, and you're all of a sudden in a different land. The faces change, you know, the environment, the geography changes. But what was very interesting to me is to travel overland and watch the gradual change in people's faces, their colors, their language, the dialects. And that was very rewarding because, and also the climate and the geography. You really get a sense of the Rift Valley, you know, mm-hmm. Nile River. That was super opening for me.
Right.
And then...
Can I ask Alan how you personally feel it? Maybe you've changed yourself from the journey?
You know, definitely. One of the things that I believe we all need to do, and I learned for myself, among many things, but how important it is to practice and exercise patience. Because with patience, you tend to see more possibilities. You're not trying to rush. And that could be just, you know, bureaucracy at a border crossing can be very frustrating. You know, Ted Simon talks about it in his book. But, you know, get through that. And then when you're sitting at a, whether you're trying to get your motorcycle repaired and enlisting the help of a local mechanic, or you're trying to find a part, or you're just
fix a broken leg. You had a broken leg on the journey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fix a broken leg. You know, exactly. In Bolivia, I slipped on some mud and the bike flew out from under me and landed on top of my leg and crushed it. And there I am in the middle of nowhere. And sure enough, it took about 12 hours before I could get anywhere and get medical attention. And that's a huge exercise in patience. And I think, you know, I've always been open to new people and new cultures and new food. But I feel that, you know, when I came back to the United States, I was just, you know, blown away that the diversity we have right here. You know, the world is in our backyards. Here in San Diego, of course, we've got, you know, not only a huge Latin community, but we've got a huge Filipino community, a huge Ethiopian community, and you don't have to travel too far to experience different cultures. And I found myself eager to go into these pockets of the city or towns that maybe I never been to before. And I think the curiosity opens up for me a lot more, and more interested in learning other people's stories. That how did they end up here in my country, which is now their country? That was a huge eye-opener for me as well. And then finally, walking into a supermarket after 3 years on the road.
I was going to ask you, did you have culture shock when you came back?
You know, you walk down the aisle and just look at the toothpaste options we have here. And, you know, I was in a store in Zambia, and it had, you know, the long, probably 100-foot aisle, 3 or 4 aisles. And on each of those shelves on both sides of the aisle, just like a supermarket you would have, but on each of those shelves, you might have had 20 products, and that's it. I mean, 20 single products, not 20 options, but here's 2 cans of beans, here's maybe 1 toothpaste, here's a toothbrush. And, you know, when all of a sudden I walk into these, you know, it seems excessive and almost gluttonous, you know, how
right.
much stuff we have. And these countries that I traveled, you know, you might have to wait. There's the patience again. A week before, I was in Malawi, and I was with some people who were looking to get butter, and they said, we're not going to have butter for 10 days.
right.
So, you know, that's kind of something that just really is like, okay. And I, it's a guilty pleasure. Wow, you know, we sit down and say, you know, we stare at the aisle at a grocery store trying to make a decision. Well, when I was on the road, my decisions were like, okay, where am I going to stop for the night? Where am I going to park my motorcycle so it's safe? And where am I going to eat? And, you know, that every day gave me enough decision fatigue to really, it's like, okay. And sometimes I just say, I'm going to stay here a week and right. just really learn, you know, what's going on. And right. then when you come here trying to decide on a, you know, option of A, B, and C and laundry detergent or something, it just seems really kind of bizarre.
Well, I know that coming home, you know what, and I can relate to that, just moving from England to America, because the products are different. You know, when you go to the grocery store the first time and you're in a hurry and it's like, oh my God, I don't know the names of any of these things. But, yeah. It's a different thing, but I understand the concept there. But your coming home was not quite what you expected. You'd had some damage done to your bike on the way home, some theft.
Yeah, I'd shipped my bike from Eastern Turkey to Baltimore, and I had put the motorcycle on the boat itself. I saw it there. I took pictures of it on the boat. It took off, and I stayed in Istanbul for a few weeks because it takes about a month to cross the big pond. And when I did finally pick up my motorcycle in Baltimore, I realized I'd been violated. My locks had been ripped off my panniers. I had cloth panniers in the front that had been slashed, and most of my gear that it still was locked and stored on that motorcycle was stolen. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, here I am, you know, after 3 years of being on the road, no one ever stole anything from me. I got pickpocketed in Buenos Aires. That's any tourist could happen. But other than that, nothing happens. And then here in my own country, I feel violated and just kind of depressed by this. And there's a picture of my motorcycle on this dilapidated pallet that, was sitting alone in this empty warehouse and, you know, with no doors, nothing there. And somebody had just had their way with my stuff. And
yeah.
That wasn't very good homecoming for sure.
Well, I know you had a busy time when you got back because it took you a couple of 3 years to write the book, to put this together. It is a beautiful book. You know, normally I don't really look at self-published books, but this is so professionally done. It's so beautiful and it's so interesting. And the book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine, and Connection. And listeners can find out more about Alan and the work that he's doing at ForksTheBook.com. A very quick final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Alan.
I think it comes back to the same thing, to let people know that two things. You don't have to travel around the world to come to these realizations, but travel does open your eyes and ignite your spirit. And I think it's important that if you choose to travel, be open to new experiences. Don't look and cocoon yourself in a big resort. And the other thing I like to say is, if you're not willing to travel or you can't for whatever reason, you know, in your own neighborhoods, I know right there in the Seattle area, you've got quite diversity there, and I'm sure you have neighborhoods. You know, go into a Latin market if you've never been to one.
Mm-hmm.
And this way you can have, you know, a bit of the experience of just brushing up with a new culture and that. And stay curious.
Yes,
for everyone, and never stop exploring.
I love that. Stay curious and never stop exploring, because and as Alan, as you said, it doesn't have to be a huge thing. It can be small little steps every day, and I love that. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Vicky, Colin.
And I want to just end today's show with a quote from Alan's book, "One's Destination is Never a Place, but a New Way of Seeing Things." Henry Miller said that. And I think if you look at this book, you definitely have a new way of seeing things. It's awesome. Well, I want to thank each of you for being with us today. Thanks, Colin, for joining us from England today. Appreciate that, too. It's a little difficult for us talking all at once, but, you know, we got through good. And we will be back next week with an all-life new show. And if you had a little too much enjoyed the festivities a little too much, you might want to join in next week to find out how you can shift some of those pounds. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. You can find me at info@conversationslive.net or at 800-495-7617. You can also find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.